Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Hey, welcome, welcome one and all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. I am your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thank you for joining me here on another FSHD Society Radio Show. That's right, you heard it right, changing the names around, right? Got the logo different, the whole thing. So we're all in. We're all in on the FSHD Society Radio. Hence the new intro. Hope you enjoy that. Thank you to my special band friends of once called Northern Room here in Milwaukee for providing me with some of that music. Real excited to be here because I think this is going to be a great show once again, as our featured guest is David Younger. He is going to be joining us about 12 past the hour and talking a little bit about relationships, probably leading to intimacy and those kinds of things, kind of based off of Facebook group conversation that was started, I think it was a couple months ago, and feeding off of that same energy, I think. So I'm really excited because that's definitely a different direction we have not gone into. So going to be cool. And the thing of it is I want you to give you that heads up that if the kids are in earshot, you know, if people have questions on Facebook about intimacy or something, we're going to talk about it. They post it. I'll definitely hand that over to Mr. Younger and talk a little bit about it. Might not be totally kid appropriate. A little bit about the show, right? You want to follow us on Twitter at FSH Society. You want to email me. You can do that, fshradiohost@gmail.com. That gets right to me. You can even email me during the show if you'd like with some questions. If you want to kind of stay a little more incognito, that's totally fine, as we have David Younger coming up soon, a psychologist. You want to do a little bit of background on Mr. Younger, dbyounger.com, chronicillnesstherapy.com, lifeafterkids.com. All those, you can find his information there, out of Austin, Texas, I believe. He has a lot to bring to the table. So we're really, really excited for this. More, I guess, over is I always like to try to touch on some things since you got all the information about today's show and how to reach out to the show. I like to have a little bit of a moment, call it a monologue, if you will, but definitely a little bit of disappointing news, Acceleron's news. You know, their trial has ended of the ACE or ACE-08483. We can be proud as a community, as I'm reading this off of the hot sheet from the FSHD Society that I just received today via email, and says that we should be proud as a community of our ability to mobilize, quickly fill, and complete this trial. The worst outcome for a clinical trial is a slow-to-recruit, dragged-out trial that leads to inconclusive results. The experience, you know, was not that. We stepped up, we did it, and then they find out this isn't working. You know, Acceleron had their statement that says, we are certainly disappointed with these results, as we have stated consistently, for ACE-083 to become an important new therapy for patients with FSHD, it would have to deliver a meaningful functional benefit on top of any ability to grow muscle. So it did not do that. And it happens. And all in our lives, right, we have come up to the wall of something difficult and try to overcome. If it's bad news, if it's disappointment, yeah, I mean, I Facebooked it out a little bit, social media, through my Twitter account as well, and disappointed, frustrated, I think was my key feeling. But I quickly moved on and thought, how do you move on, right? You go to the next thing. What's the other trial? And what else, you know, what else can you do going forward? Is there a trial in your area? Don't forget the government website to take a look. We had some information for you last month's show. The University of Minnesota is doing not a trial, but a study. if you want to become part of that, to help understand this disease even more. Be a part of those things. We adjust, we adapt, and we move forward. That's how it's got to be. That's what we always have done. That's what we will continue to do as a community. So that's kind of my two cents on that, because, you know, what other choice do we have? What other choice do you have? You just keep climbing the ladder, and hopefully something else comes through. I know that our goal of 2025 is there, and I think it's still in reach, and I'm hoping that we all don't forget that, So a little disappointment on that, but we move forward, and I will right now. I want to say thanks and hi to everybody there popping in on Facebook Live. Justin, Turf Tank, hello, how are you? Candace Norman, I saw that you posted some great things about the FSHD Society radio show on Facebook. Thank you for doing that. She says, thank you so much for these shows. Thank you for your participation, Candace. Martha, hi. She says, hello. June Kinoshita looks like she is in as well. So I think she does some of the chatting via for the FSHD Society, as you'll see it. She says June here on there. So Amy, hello, how are you? And it looks like Mr. Younger's already checking out the show, that he is the featured guest tonight. So we have a lot of people popping in. And I love it, because that's the way this should be. I think it's going to be a fun, topic-filled discussion here, talking about, you know, intimacy, talking about relationships. This was a conversation started a little bit with, you know, David and June Kinoshita on a private. It wasn't private. It was within a Facebook group, and that you could participate. And I looked over that discussion. I wasn't able to participate live during that while that was happening. And we're kind of hoping maybe that this platform will be maybe a little more comfortable for you. And if it's not, you want to email me your questions, you can, fshradiohost@gmail.com. You can do that if you want to stay a little more, you know, under the radar. If you don't want to have your question just blurted out, you know, through Facebook Live, that's fine. Another person just jumped in. Robin, hi, from Missouri. Hello, how are you? Oh, Robin, you know, when I see Missouri, I'm going to have to say, I'm a Brewer fan. And I don't know if you're a Cardinals fan or Royals fan or not a baseball fan at all. I don't know, but I had to make a side note here, because my Brewers are winning when I came down here to start the show. I was really excited because I think they win today. They're in the playoffs. It's just remarkable. Sorry, side note. You're from Missouri. Figured, let's talk baseball for a second. going back to the subject at hand. June is typed in. Yes, we had a Facebook discussion on FSHD teen/young adults. That's where we found it. That's where I tapped into some of the questions I'm going to have. Maybe some of these questions I have that you have. You know, some of the ones that I've dealt with on a personal level, I have no problem sharing or talking about. I'll be completely open about it. No problem here for me on that, because, you know, that's what I do. I'm pretty outspoken about things, and that's one of them. And for me, it's a how do I feel masculine type question that I plan on bringing up, you know, muscle, strength. Those are the things that are supposed to be attractive to the opposite sex for me, right? Or to my wife. And if those things are going away, then how am I attractive, right? So those kind of questions. So you got your brain spinning maybe. You're already starting to think about some things, and, you know, maybe it's not a problem question. Maybe you want to get even better. Maybe you're dynamite already at your relationship, but maybe you got something to offer others that are maybe not feeling so confident about their relationship. So I don't want it to be all about doom and gloom and bad news about relationships, but maybe for some great advice, for some cross-sharing between listeners would be awesome. Awesome. Another side note, on the health tips, there was a CBD and medical marijuana posted a recording, or we had a webinar out there. Customers or consumer's guide to navigating this promising but unregulated landscape. I think that is out there and available. Maybe June can post that as well for us. She's probably hot on it right now, seeing where I was going with it. Always trying to send out what's going on in the FSHD Society world. And I know that is, I believe, out there as a webinar available for you too. So load up your questions, load up your emails, get that box filled. FSHradiohost@gmail.com is a great email if you want to send it my way. I can probably get that open a little more easily at the ready for me here. and next month's show, I wanted to talk about that too real quick. We have on next month's show. Who's on next month's show? Oh, yeah. Mr. Brown from the NFL Films. We tried to have him on a couple shows back, and I had major gremlins tearing apart my equipment or something. It just was not working. And obviously it's fixed now. We made it work, and no big deal. But he's going to be on. I know he's excited to come on the show. He's already one of my favorite guests because he's been so cordial and patient, and we're really excited to have him on. And we keep moving forward. In November, we're already working on the guests that will be. The dates are going to change a little bit in November and December. So you might want to note this, even though I know FSH D Society will note it as well. The show in November will be on the 20th Wednesday because it's Thanksgiving, like the next day. So we don't want to put it on the 27th. So it's on the 20th in November and on the 18th in December. So that'll be on the calendars and things will be adjusted. Hopefully I'll have some great guests lined up for you that we can tease about as well. So a lot of things in the hopper. All right, got the email box up. Send me your questions. Go do that. You want to load up the Facebook with some questions, you can as well. June is on it. She's got the CBD webinar on there. She's got Alan Brown on October 30th posted on there as well on Facebook Live. All there for you and available for you to click in another browser. Don't lose us, because when we come back, we're going to have our featured guest on. I'm going to call him up on the break. You always, those that are watching get to see that inside. Ooh, what does he do there in that little studio of his? We're going to call Mr. Younger on the line here while you listen to a break from the FSH Society.
You're listening to FSH Society Radio. Hey everyone, this is Tim, host of FSH Society Radio. And get this, in 2014, a Dutch team reported that aerobic exercise training and cognitive behavioral therapy decreased fatigue and improved the quality of life significantly for FSHD patients. This suggests a marked impact in slowing the degeneration of affected muscles. So I don't want to hear any excuses. You can get out there, get active, start exercising, and let's start fighting this thing. Hi, this is Tim again, and have you been recently diagnosed with FSHD and kind of trying to search for answers? I mean, there's so many questions. Where do you go? Well, go to fshsociety.org. Join the FSH Society. Get educated, because knowledge is power. Get active. Connect with local members. Volunteer for research and donate, because without you, we can't fight this. Go to fshsociety.org.
Hello, Mr. David Younger. Are you there with us?
I am.
Beautiful.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. First off, thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking the time out tonight to talk with us all a little bit about yourself to start. And I think also maybe what is going on in people's minds when we're tackling sometimes maybe that sticky subject, you know, intimacy, relationships. Even when I say it, my face changes. You know, it's just sometimes people want to talk about it and some do, but they kind of don't. So I'm hoping that we can get some great questions and people can get some good help from you today in this window that we have. So first off, how I love to start all our guests out is tell us a little bit about yourself and your FSHD story.
So I was diagnosed when I was about four, at the same time that my mother and grandmother were diagnosed. And at that time, the only symptoms that I had were that I slept with my eyes partially closed. I also had slight scapula winging, due to muscle loss, but I was able to play sports like baseball, hockey, and tennis, and to basically pretend that this illness was not my own.
Right.
When a stair lift was put in our basement so that my mother could get up the stairs, I thought it was her disease and not mine. I didn't think that consciously, but that's the way it played out in my head. And I told my friends that the stair lift was there because my parents are rare book dealers and they used it to transport books up and down the stairs. So I was able to play competitive sports throughout high school, but at the same time, like you, I think, who you mentioned in your PBS special, which I watched, which is great.
Yeah.
That I couldn't do push-ups, and I failed the New York State phys ed exam because I wasn't able to do the required amount of push-ups and sit-ups.
Yeah, but
I didn't tell anyone about it. I didn't tell my parents about that. I didn't tell the gym teacher. I just kept it all inside and tried to find ways around it. 5 years later, I remember not being able to do the pummel horse in gymnastics and staying afterwards to do some ridiculous self-effacing routine where I was doing half-baked somersaults around the room and telling a joke after each one, like a court jester.
Yeah.
But again, that was better than saying something, and I didn't say anything to anyone. So it was like a scarlet letter that I tried for many years to hide. And the hiding was automatic without even thinking about it. Like, I didn't sit near the stacking chairs, so I wouldn't have to pick one up if someone needed one. I never tried to put a bag on the overhead rack on the train or the plane.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't try to get too close to a girl because of what might happen if it got intimate. Would I be exposed? Would she find out? So I only fell for the girls that were already in relationships or that were unattainable. And constructed elaborate fantasies in my mind to, you know, where the relationships would happen. And it wasn't until my senior year in college that I finally told my best friend and then a few other close friends. And it felt like I was coming out of the closet, like I was letting him into a place that was so sacred and that made me so vulnerable. And they were inside my skin, and just a little poke and prod could cause so much damage. I remember going for my first hike that year with my three closest friends, and it was a real struggle for me, as you can imagine. I was totally wiped out when we got to the top, and we had the choice of going down the same way or going down a much easier path that would have taken a bit longer. I said that I needed to go down that path, and one of my friends was disappointed and said he was going the other way. And granted, we were young and the envy wasn't so obvious, but he knew it was tough for me, and it felt so wounding. And I thought, is that what will happen when I let people in? They won't care. They won't believe me. I'll be a handicap. So more symptoms started to manifest themselves in my mid-20s, but I was still able to get around quite well. But it was becoming more and more difficult to turn a blind eye to the disease, and it was becoming more of an effort to hide it from others. And that's when I started in therapy, and I was in a serious relationship. My consciousness was changing alongside my body. But my college years in my early to mid-20s were definitely full of a lot of existential angst and depression, which is when I turned to psychology, both, you know, going to therapy and also professionally. I left the family business to start studying in grad school and then moved to London to continue my studies and to continue my therapy. And that's where I met and fell in love with my wife, who was in a program that I was studying in. And I spent countless hours in my therapy working through my anxiety about telling her about the MD. I did not want to lose her, and I was terrified that I would. So I did end up telling her. We got engaged, and a year later we got married in Peru, where she's from, and a year after that, our son was born in London, and I went on to do my PhD there, and a couple of therapy training, and then we decided to move back to New York, and be closer to family, where we were for about 10 years, My 30s were really rough physically. That's when it started getting harder and harder to get around, and I started tripping. And I kind of joke in a morbid, joking way that I'm like a bit like Raging Bull. I don't know if you've ever seen Raging Bull, but like Robert De Niro's nose, I've broken my nose probably like 5 times from falling, and I got AFOs, and it was just, you know, it had become something that I just had tried to ignore to something totally impossible to ignore. And it was becoming more and more difficult to navigate the city. And our daughter Emma was born in 2014, and then we moved to Austin in 2015, and I've been here for 4 years, and it was a great move, and I'm thrilled to be out of New York and out of the snow and all the people walking around with their heads down and their cell phones and, you know, trying to navigate the streets there. So I still go back to visit them.
So
that's my life. That's in, what, 5 minutes?
Well, I do appreciate you sharing a lot of that, because I'm sure a lot of people were shaking their heads like I were, you know, or I was, as I heard a lot of the things you were talking about where, yeah, I didn't know that I had anything wrong with me, if you want to use that term. I don't really like that, but you know, I didn't know about this disease, right? That it was like my friend. And, from that aspect, you know, I didn't have any, I guess, since I didn't have any knowledge of it, I didn't like think, oh, I have to keep something quiet. You know, I just figured, well, some of these things that I'm feeling when it came to bullying or this or that, they were all side issues, or normal social issues. So I can't imagine if I knew what was going on with my body that I'd have to tackle it, you know, on top of the other thing. So that must have took a ton of emotional stress and toll on you at a very young age.
Yeah, and absolutely, and stress that I just wasn't aware of. I wasn't talking about. And that's the thing, is that I've become aware of it, you know, in hindsight, but I was just had it really compartmentalized, and, you know, I didn't grow up in therapy, and I didn't want to talk about those things, and I wish I had, but I'm glad that on the other hand, I'm glad that I did end up going to therapy and start dealing with all this.
How tough was it to have that conversation with your, you know, girlfriend, you know? You wanted probably to her to be your fiance, and now she's your wife. But how tough was that first couple sentences to talk about FSHD with her?
Oof. I mean, it's one of those like flashbulb memories that, like when, you know, 9/11 happened, I mean, it's the same kind of, thing. I just remember exactly like we were being in the kitchen of our flat in London, and, telling her I wanted to talk to her, and starting to describe, you know, just telling her that I had this type of muscular dystrophy and I don't know what is going to happen, describing that it's degenerative. There's no way to know how it's going to progress. And, you know, we were so in love, and I think, you know, at that point, again, I was able to do most things. So I think it was quite abstract for her. She did come to an appointment with me to see my neurologist. But it was also still, just like, there's no way to know if his legs are going to be affected. And he could go through most of his life without his legs being affected, which wasn't the case. So obviously it was a huge relief when she hugged me and told me she loved me and, you know, wanted to be with me. But it's definitely one of those memories that it lives very vividly inside me.
Now, you are a psychologist, right?
Yes.
That's what you went to school for. Did the motivation to go into school for that, train for that, make that part of your life, did the motivation come within there because of what you went through, that, you know, the dark spots and the denials, and maybe you just hope the therapy helped you, maybe then you can help others. Is that a little bit where the motivation came from to do what you do now?
Yes, 100%. I don't think, I mean, who knows what, you know, it's like, it's impossible to know what I would have done and, you know, where I would be, you know, if I wasn't also sort of coming to terms with the FSH, but it was definitely a way of integrating not just, you know, me being in therapy, but just the fascination for someone who had just sort of kept things, again, so shut off for so many years. It was like, oh, wow, I just started exploring my mind. And there was a lot to explore. And so it was definitely part of my healing process, the coming to terms process, and then wanting to do something that felt meaningful to me.
How many people do you talk to or help in your practice that have chronic health issues or conditions?
About a third of the people I work with have different chronic health issues. I have a couple of people who have FSHD, SMA, another type of muscular dystrophy, cancers, Parkinson's, but I've a lot of different types of chronic illnesses. But yeah, it's about a third now of my practice of people with chronic health conditions.
How do you see your patients? Is it online, face to face?
So since I had an office in New York, and when we moved to Austin, I took my practice completely online, which has been such a blessing. I'm sitting in my office now in my house. And I just love it because I work with people all over the country and in different parts of the world. And it gives me so much flexibility. I don't have to commute. And obviously, for people who have chronic health issues, it's hard for them to commute to an office. Mm-hmm. And it gives them that flexibility to do it from home.
Yeah, I think that's great. I know I'm hitting a crossroads, it feels, in my job as well, very physical work, and starting to make a game plan, because that's what I do. Yeah. I try to plan, like, okay, I can't do this forever. So that's right. Awesome that you're able to do your passion, something that I like to say gives you the juice, right? You get excited probably to get up in the morning and to tackle the day when you know that you can make a big difference in people's lives, such as this kind of job that you have. Talk a little bit about the mindful and the meditation side of your practice.
So I'm currently doing a mindfulness and meditation teacher training, which I'm really excited about. And I have my own personal meditation practice. I meditate twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I incorporate it implicitly in terms of it just informs the way I think and the way I work and relate, and explicitly in terms of teaching people that are interested where it's appropriate, you know, different mindfulness and meditation skills. And for me, it's probably the single most biggest factor that and therapy that has really helped me to transform my life. And it was a path into training my mind. I used to go to bed and my mind would be like off to the races. I couldn't fall asleep. And every day used to be, this is like back when I was in my 20s, like every day would be, I wouldn't know if I was going to be, some days I would be depressed, other days I would feel good, and there was no rhyme or reason, and I was at the mercy of my mind. And yeah, this practice has really helped me to train my mind, because our minds need training. So this aspect of mindfulness of experience, which is like a focusing and observing our present experience. But then there's also self-compassion practice, which I'm quite immersed in these days. And I said a good way to think about it is like mindfulness is directed towards whatever we are experiencing in the moment, and self-compassion is directed towards the experience or towards ourselves. So how are we responding to ourselves in any given, you know, moment and interaction? And frankly, that is what I thought so much about. I was excited to talk to you today and to be able to do this. And I thought so much about it. And I also reread the chat as well, and thought, you know, looked at the two most common issues in that list of eight issues that from that chat were body image issues and self-consciousness and feeling like a burden. And then there were a few others that also that were popular. The balance of having your partner as a caretaker, sexual challenges, and social isolation. But the top two, the body image issues and self-consciousness and feeling like a burden, I just feel like the best way to talk about those issues is to filter it through the lens of self-compassion. And because there's, so maybe a good way to, a good thing to talk about would be probably what's my favorite Buddhist teaching, which is called the parable of the two arrows. And the first arrow is what life brings at us, including illness, loss, things that we can't control, that cause us pain and sadness and impact us, but they don't kill us. The second arrow is what we shoot at ourselves in response to the first arrow, and it's all the projections, anxieties, fears, the resistance. I don't want to be feeling this, and it's all of those, the reactions to whatever the first arrow was, that make the pain, that turn the pain into suffering, that make it unbearable. And for me, that's what therapy is about too. It's really understanding, you know, and separating out what are the first arrows that we can't do anything about, and what are the second arrows that we can do something about. And so much are second arrows, including shame, self-consciousness, body issues, and feeling like a burden.
Yeah, I think that the I know you're talking about. We're talking with Dr. David Younger. He's a psychologist, now resides in Austin, Texas, and deals with a lot of chronic illness patients in his practice. And you're talking about, you mentioned the eight, you know, key things that seem to come up throughout your practice, but you also brought those up back when we, or you did the Facebook discussion. And I believe June Kinoshita posted it. If everyone would scroll through, if you're watching on Facebook Live and listening that way, on the FSHD teens/young adults page on Facebook. And you're right; you talked definitely kind of hit home on these eight things. And one of them, you know, for me too, was the shame about having a disability or the body image issues. I don't know if I have a shame about my disability per se, but definitely I lean more to the body image issue. When I was opening the show, I talked about how I keep seeing, and I do believe that when you notice something and you're conscious of it, if it's negative things, if you're all negative, you're going to see only negative things. If you're very positive and you try to fill your life with positivity, you'll see positive things. And for me, I have body image issues of lack of strength, and I don't have pectoral muscles, and I'm not, that means I'm not masculine, because everywhere I turn, all I see is dudes walking the beach without a shirt on and on TV, and the ladies are turning their heads and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, I'm like, was my wife I mean, does she miss that, or, you know, because I don't have that. And it becomes this awareness of what society says what a man should be, strong, muscular, and I'm not. So let's attack that one. You know, someone is like me saying, man, this is a tough one for me to get over. What are any of the first steps I need to do to kind of, you know, feel a little better about myself?
Yeah, great question. And I join you in that as well. And, you know, struggles with body image and self-consciousness and, you know, my relationship to my own masculinity. And so now when I go on trips or when I have to walk long distances, I use a chair. And so I've also had the experience of being someone who walked around all the time to being someone now, like when I go to New York, I'll go around in a chair. And it's a very different reality that I've had the chance to, you know, to experience. The thing that I think is the most important, again, is filtering it through the lens of the two arrows and the self-compassion, is you're right. Like, we live in a society where we're bombarded with images of muscular, strong, healthy, able-bodied, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, men. And we internalize that. We internalize that, you know, I think people overall don't want to look at disability because people don't want to look at things that they don't want to, you know, face themselves or deal with them with themselves. And so it's complicated, the fact that we're already internalizing this sense of this shame or this defectiveness. And again, when I say we, you know, I'll speak to, you know, you and me right now in terms of, you know, what we're sharing. Mm-hmm. I know others do too, but I never want to, you know, make, you know, generalized statements like this is what everyone experiences.
Right.
That's not the case at all. So basically, I feel like, I'll give another little tool here that I think can be helpful is, it's an acronym called RAIN. The R stands for recognize. So just recognize, recognize whatever you're feeling in the moment. Like I'm feeling self-conscious right now, or I'm not feeling masculine because I can't lift these things or because I don't have the body that I want to have. And the A is acceptance, meaning this is what is happening right now. It doesn't mean that you're accepting that that's the way you're always going to feel. It's just accepting this is what's happening in the moment. The I is investigate with compassion. And that investigation is not as much a cerebral intellectual investigation as much as like checking in with your body and, you know, where do you feel this, whatever it is that you're feeling? Like, do you feel it in your stomach, in your chest? And just sitting with it and allowing it to be there. And the N is nurturing, which is, you know, basically imagining, and this is where the self-compassion comes in. Self-compassion, the easiest way to frame it is like, imagine the person you love the most is going through the same thing. How would you respond to that person? And then ask yourself, you know, do I respond to myself that way? And the overwhelming majority of people don't. Like, the majority of people, I think, are much harder on themselves than they would be with people that they love. And that's the key. So how would you respond to yourself in this moment that you're describing the way that you would describe to one of your, you know, respond to one of your kids or to your wife or to your best friend? And if you really think about it, it's quite profound.
Yeah, I think it's, man, you've you definitely give some people, I think, something to think about there, especially when you're talking about almost like putting the shoe on the other, you know, foot, so to speak, right? I mean, walk a mile in my shoes, or what if the shoe is on the other foot? Okay, my partner has this issue or something like that. I mean, yeah. There was a person here, Candace, and she posted this on here. She talks about how she's been married, you know, 9 years ago, slim, healthy. Then 1.5 years ago, post having two kids, I have lordosis. So she's got, you know, the belly look. She says, it looks like I'm pregnant all the time. I'm not. She struggles with the shame of that. And she believes that sometimes her husband thinks, hey, this isn't what I signed up for. So that is a lot to me, especially that last sentence, you know, kind of jumping into the mind of your husband and trying to grasp his point of view and thinking negatively, like, oh, this is not what he wants. You know, this is not what he said I do about. You know, he wanted, as she said, you know, the slim and seemingly healthy body lady of 9 years ago. You know, so any advice that you could give Candace, I mean, is it, hey, follow that, talk to maybe her husband about Rain, what you were just talking about? Is that kind of a great step for her too?
First of all, Candace, thank you so much for sharing that. Another thing that I totally identify with, and I just kind of want to start by just sending you a hug. I feel you. And have often, you know, I know my wife didn't have any idea what she was signing up for either. And there were so many times when I was getting worse and I was just like, leave, like, you don't need to do this. Like, this is in my body. But you don't need to stick around for this. And I felt guilty, and we've done a lot of couples therapy over the years too, and have really worked on communicating. And, but still, I mean, it's not something that ever goes away. And, but it's there. It's like, we can't pretend that it's not there or that it shouldn't be there. And yes, this is a good opportunity to practice the Rain and the self-compassion, you know, and this too, this is, you know, everyone has their own circumstances, their own versions of things that they struggle with. And when we're married, you know, the piece of paper and the ring, great, you know, they are symbolic, but ultimately we're choosing to be with our partners every day. And my wife, your husband, is choosing to be with you. My wife is choosing to be with me, and there are going to be times when it is harder to make that choice and times when it's easier, times when it's harder for us to allow them to make the choice to be with us when, you know, we are going through what we're going through. But again, I'll probably come back to this every time today in our talk, but is the self-compassion. I just feel like that's the lens that we filter everything through. If we feel awful about ourselves, we are going to project that onto the world, onto the people we're in relationship with, and it's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And you know, again, it's just asking that question. You don't have to, it's like a rhetorical question. What would it be like if I could treat myself and love myself the same way I would to the people I love the most? And there's also, last thing on that, I would just say, there's a great, there's a professor at UT Austin, actually. Her name is Kristen Neff, and she's like a self-compassion specialist, and she and a colleague came out with a self-compassion workbook, which is like a do-it-yourself version of a 10-week self-compassion and mindfulness course that she's offering. And I'm doing that a lot. I've encouraged a lot of the people I work with to get this workbook, and I have it too. And I always tell people, I'm going through it with you, and that's the way I work with people, and also sharing my own vulnerabilities when appropriate, and that this is a journey we're all on together.
Now, I think that some people might be thinking in this direction as well, so I'll be the brave one to talk about it. We're talking about, I want to shift it a little bit into even the more intimate sexual issues sometimes you're going to deal with when you have FSHD with you and your partner. So is it a challenge because of positions are no longer what they were? You struggle, you can't do this. I know I have that issue. There's things I could do before. I really can't do so well now. So then it leaks into, now I'm not fulfilling a need for someone else, for your partner. You're not, good enough for it. All this negativity, seems to come in. And you just, for me, I keep trying to look for a reassurance. And you want to get that. You want to get some type of feedback from your partner. Can you offer any advice in those avenues? I know that's such a big, wide topic I just kind of opened up.
No, it's great. Yeah. It's great, Tim. And again, something that personally I deal with, and also comes up in many different ways in my work with people. And it's true. I also can't prop myself up on my hands and whatever the push up position I used to be able to, and just become a lot more limited in my mobility. For me, over the last, I would say, decade, my libido has also gone down. And there are a number of factors that I think, that definitely have contributed to that. But the issues of just feeling I can't perform, or you can't, it's harder to, am I satisfying my partner? And again, there are issues that can be hard to talk about and make you, vulnerable to talk about, but the alternative is to ignore it, which I don't think is really a viable alternative.
Agreed.
And there are many different avenues you can go down sexually. You can explore with assistive devices, you can go to couples therapy and sex therapy and have a space also to talk about it. You can explore, it's important to explore and research different positions and different ways to, be with each other intimately. So it's another one that is, it's loaded. It can be loaded if you're, for the person that feels like, I can't bring to the table what I want to bring to the table. Also loaded for the partner who, doesn't want to be wounding, doesn't want to express their feelings because they're worried about, hurting or shaming. So,
yeah,
there's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. It's multi-layered. And I think the biggest thing, or a couple of things that you said in what you were talking about there and previously, was, and it really stands out, is communication. But I think that's number one in any relationship, with any situation you're in the relationship, if someone is dealing with a chronic illness or whatnot or not. To me, there has to be open communication, especially in intimacy. And I always had the advice from someone that told me once, if you want to have a good conversation about your sex life with your partner, talk about it when there's no chance you're going to have it, in that moment, that night. So it doesn't you're about to do something, but wait, hang on, because I really want to talk about this issue I have with it.
Absolutely.
Not good timing. Yeah. So try to find, you know, that's my small advice from a person that's not a psychologist like myself, that, you know, choose your timing. Less is more, but definitely, you know, get right to the source of what you're feeling. I'm uncomfortable going back and forth with my wife about it too, because I know she gets uncomfortable about it. So then I feel like I'm guarding her. And I've already probably said too much right there. If she heard this, she'd go, "Hey, what are you doing?" No, it's like, I think communication, yeah, is definitely has to be number one. And do not, you know, do it. Try, keep working at it together. Like you said, don't avoid it, because early on, I'm going to pick on Candace again, because she's doing a phenomenal job in chatting in on this on Facebook Live. So if others want to follow her suit here, please do, because she talked about avoiding it, avoiding intimacy so that we can avoid acknowledging. And she's referencing your arrow analogy. You said it was the Buddhist two arrow story. And she referenced that there and said, you know, to avoid the first arrow. So she's saying avoid intimacy. I can honestly say I don't avoid intimacy, and this might not sound really nice either, but I think I have devalued it. Meaning, when I was younger, the way I saw it is like, well, for doing this, she must love me and really want me and all that kind of stuff. And as I got older, and I don't think it has necessarily anything to do with FSHD, I started reading more of the love language things, and realizing that, you know, yeah, sex is great, and of course, and intimacy is a huge part. And but look at all this other stuff I'm not occupying my mind with, you know, that I should be. Like, look what she's doing. Look all these things she's doing for the family, for me, even, you know, for her parents. I mean, all these signs of love that aren't intimate necessarily, you know, bedroom stuff. It's like, that holds value. And in my immature, you know, sex hungry, you know, 20s, 30s, whatever, you know, it's like, I'm thinking, yeah, you know, I that's the only way I can say it now is like, I've kind of devalued it a little bit. It's still important, don't get me wrong, but there's so many other things that are too.
Absolutely. I mean, I completely agree. And when you're, in a long-term relationship and you know, whether you have kids or don't have kids, mm-hmm. which is another topic I would like to get
Please
into
do.
As well,
mm-hmm.
if we have time. But
absolutely.
Someone reached out and sent us sort of with their situation, saying that they're currently not married, but have the desire to get married and potentially start a family,
mm-hmm.
and just wants to learn more about how would this affect their relationship with a specific someone, and how he could prepare for it, or whether there are things that really need to be addressed ahead of time. And again, it's very, there are many ways to approach these things. And, you know, I would never say to someone that, especially someone that I don't even know, well, oh, this is what you have to do. I definitely don't have the Dr. Phil approach. I really like to, you know, get to know someone's world, you know, before even giving opinions.
Mm-hmm.
But so it will depend on the person, and it will also change over time.
Right.
There are things that you can do, like look at the FSH Society website together. Have them go to an appointment with you to, like my wife did, to see your urologist so they can ask questions. And set a precedent for open and honest communication. Another option in terms of kids is to, you know, obviously there are different ways to have kids. The first is deciding, do we both want kids? Mm. Second is, do we want to do it you know, together, both have a biological child? Do we want to test in utero or not? And what would we do if the results come out positive? And of course, there are the options of using a donor, a sperm donor, an egg donor, or adopting. And of course, the options of not having a kid. So it's really, it's definitely important to set that precedent for a lot of open and honest communication about all of this. You can meet with a genetic counselor to talk about options if you plan on getting pregnant together, and to talk about another option, which is a bit, I don't know, pre-implantation genetic testing,
okay.
which is not direct testing, like you do when you get your genetic test. So it's a bit tricky with FSH, but there are labs that do that. So for people that want to explore having a biological child together, but not facing the risk of just testing in utero. Another helpful thing to do would be to have some sessions with a therapist or a coach to just have a place to talk about it and say, you know, we need help talking through these things. So there are questions, for example, if you both want to have children, like I said, and you want to use your sperm, will you test in utero? And again, what will you do if those test results are positive? It's extremely personal, and will require a lot of thought and communication and really difficult conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the conversation has to be taking place. It goes back to that communication, like I was talking to you about. And it's not just about intimacy and what are you doing in the bedroom and this and that. And then, when you have a family, or are you going to have a family? And like you said, now, I'm adopted. Now, if I would rewind the clock and if I knew this about me before I had our kids, I'd play that game a little bit in my mind. What would we have done? You know, would we still have had them? Would we have done adoption route? Like, yeah, because I was adopted, so I know how that experience can be positive. I don't know, knowing the statistics and the chances and all this. And I don't obviously regret having the kids that we have. Our two boys are awesome, and I don't see signs at this point that they have it. And you kind of, a little paranoid about it. So there's that element of it. And then, of course, having kids in general, when we're talking about intimacy before, that can kind of, put a little monkey wrench in some of the things that you might want to do or used to do, and, changes your life that way. So have that conversation, not just from the FSHD standpoint of, we have this, and then having someone with a chronic illness, and then do you have kids, and then what does that mean with working your lives, taking care of the children, et cetera, but also passing, gene on to them that they could have the same issue. So you're right. There's a lot to talk about, and I think the conversation has to be made between, you and your partner to know, what's the best direction for both of you. And I think if you are a couple listening to this and you're engaged, let's say, I think you better have that question before you even, go down the aisle, as I'm using air quotes, and say your I do's. Get it all out. Have what make your opinion count and matter, and talk it out before that, because you don't want to shelf or table that conversation for after that. Those are important things that you want to, bring out immediately.
Absolutely, and the other thing I encourage is to get help, because these are incredibly deep, challenging issues that. It's not the kind of thing where you just have you sit down, have a talk for half an hour, and then, all right, we're done. Let's move on. These are really, deeply existential issues and make us think about our own existence. What if my grandparents knew that my mom had FSH, and what if my parents knew that I had FSH? And so they're really deep issues and questions, and get help if you
and help also brings in a point of view that you might not even have thought of. You're kind of tunnel visioned into your thoughts, your feelings, and your side of it. And then say it with your spouse, and there might be actually something neither one of you thought about that might change your whole mindset and go, oh, wait a minute, well, that changes everything. So you're right. Get that help because it introduces a different point of view, a different mind in there. And I think that's very, very wise there. We're talking here with Dr. David Younger. He has some websites out there you can take a look, chronicillnesstherapy.com, loveafterkids.com, and dbyounger.com, a little bit about himself and his bio on that last website. What advice would you give, doctor, about, or to someone, I should say, that maybe just got diagnosed recently, and let's say they're in a relationship, since that's really what we've been talking about?
So what advice would I give someone who was just diagnosed?
Yeah. Let's say that this happened.
Specifically regarding the relationship or?
Well, you know, I like to give this question, you know, to some guests that come on, but yeah, I think in regards to the relationship, you know, for me, it would be from that point of view of, you know, you're both going to that, you got an engaged couple, let's say, or they're just starting to date more exclusively. And this has come into someone's life where they can't ignore it anymore. They have something wrong with them. They visit their doctor. They go down that trail. They get diagnosed. And this person's been maybe along their side during that diagnosis process. And now you get the answer. This is what it is. We talked about communication. You know, is there anything beyond that that you would offer them?
I would say for someone who's newly diagnosed, that the best thing that you can possibly do is, talk to a therapist, a counselor, a spiritual counselor, someone at your church, synagogue, whatever. Just get help to start working through the issues. And one thing that I can promise you, it's going to change. That's the one thing that we can guarantee with just about everything in life is that, you know, your thoughts, your feelings, your beliefs about what you're going through are going to evolve and change. And if you just find out as an adult and, you know, you are totally shocked about it, that's traumatic. You know, that's a big deal, and it's going to take time to, you know, for that to settle, for you to start integrating that reality into, you know, your reality, and doing research and finding out about FSH, which is obviously, the FSH Society is amazing for resource for that. And not isolating, shutting down and withdrawing, but really reaching out for help.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Dr. Younger, for being on with us today. We appreciate your time, and honestly, I think we're going to have to schedule you again in an upcoming episode. I think we only just scratched the very surface of this conversation.
Absolutely. I'm happy to come back again. And call me David, please.
Oh, sorry. David, then thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
And we'll look forward to having you on again. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks so much, Jamie. It's great talking to you. And bye to everyone.
So that is Dr. David Younger. I wanted to touch on this last comment that, like I said, Candace has been working hard typing in along with the Facebook conversation here. She says, when we were talking about when I said that final question to David Younger, hey, what would you do with a couple? What advice would you give to them? You know, this just comes out. They're just dating or they're just engaged. Now you find out you just were diagnosed, you know, one of them. What are you doing? And her comment around in that neighborhood when we were talking about it, she said, yes, what if they choose not to have us if they knew what we had this? My advice to that is, then so be it. Because if they don't want you, all of you, including the disease, then that's probably okay. That doesn't mean it's not going to hurt or suck if you have to break up or they decide this is not what they wanted. it's better to know then. It's better to know then when you're in the dating process or only engaged. I don't want to say only engaged like it's devaluing it. But, you know, before you make that larger leap then into the marriage world, you know, better just to say it. Better just to get it out. Better just to iron it out. Because if not, it's just going to stick there and then resentment comes in and other problems and not good. So if they don't want you, so be it. Someone will. I guarantee it. I can make that guarantee. Because I'm the host of the FSHD Society Radio Show. No, it has nothing to do with it. our special thanks to David Younger today for joining us. That was exquisite. Awesome, awesome guest. We will have him in 2020 coming up as the calendar turns as we start filling up the guest book from show to show. Looks like also June was posting some things here as well on Facebook Live. The Chicagoland Family Day coming up October 20th, because I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the news before we close up shop for the day, and that's one of the things that's going on in the calendar. We have, like I mentioned, the Chicagoland FSHD Family Day on October 20th. That's happening, so mark your calendars down. That is huge. Let's see. FSHD Society also announces the 2020 conference. June 27th, 28th, 2020 is the next FSHD Connect conference, which will be held at the Washington Hilton in Washington, D.C. So that's exciting. Those are just a couple big events for you to mark down. The Western Washington FSHD Community Group meeting, that's Saturday, it's the September 28th. Kansas City Chapter Area Social Gathering. At the Classic Bean in Topeka, Kansas, Saturday, September 28th, 11:30. Atlanta Walk and Roll to Cure FSHD, happening on the 29th. FSHD Connecticut Connections is meeting, I believe, virtually on October 3rd. North Carolina Walk and Roll to Cure FSHD, their event is happening October 5th, 9 a.m. at the North Carolina State University in Raleigh. The October 6th offers us the Pacific Northwest Walk and Roll. Also in Connecticut, they're having theirs on October 6th. Very exciting, 2-in-1 day. The Southwest Arizona Local Lunch Get Together. That's happening. It looks like, let's see here, on October 12th at Brother John's Barbecue. That sounds good. San Diego Chapter Kickoff Meeting. So that sounds like a good time. I'd love to head out that way because it's San Diego, and in October, Wisconsin's cold, San Diego's not. That is October 19th there, 10 a.m. at the UCSD Center for Neural Circuits and Behavioral. Ooh, nice. Tampa Chapter Meeting and Webinar October 19th. That's happening. Wow, so much on the docket. Stay with me, folks. Here we go. We got October 19th, Greater Philadelphia Chapter Meeting. Also on the 19th, Arizona Chapter Meeting and Webinar Discussion. As past mentioned, on the 20th is the Chicagoland Family Day Conference. October 26th, Western Washington FSHD Community Group Meeting. And finally, on the 27th of October, Los Angeles Walk and Roll to Cure FSHD. So much. I know you didn't write it all down. There's no way you remembered all that. That's okay, because that's what the FSHSociety.org website is for. Everything is on there for you. Past shows of the FSHD Society Radio Show are on there. Also, you can find the show anywhere you find podcasts. We get it out there on Spotify. I think someone mentioned it's on Google as well, if you get your podcasts there. I make sure it just gets fired out all over the place to get the word out. And yes, I like to be as humble as possible, but I would like to mention to you personally, I have a local Milwaukee PBS segment on their 10:36 show, was aired last week Thursday, and it's available for on-demand viewing. Around the 10:50 mark within the show is when my segment starts. It talks about FSHD, FSHD Society, as well as a little bit of my baseball coaching. And it highlighted more of me than I guess wanted, because like I said, I'm trying to be humble in this, but I'm happy because I think my story is our story. And if I could get it out even through a local public broadcasting station, so be it. Any way I can, I will. I'm here for all of you. If you need to get a hold of me and talk more about this subject or others, feel free to email me anytime, fshradiohost@gmail.com. I'm here for you in any capacity possible, even if you just want someone to talk to. I'm here for you. till next month when we have another great guest, Alan Brown, coming on from the NFL Films. I'm looking forward to that since we're knee-deep in the NFL season. A lot of fun in store for that conversation. So hope you all come back in October. I believe that's on the 30th. Double-check my notes. Yes, on the 30th, the last Wednesday of the month. We'll see you back here. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Good night.